Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Boy Scouts of America dates back more than 100 years. At one time, 15% of U.S. youth belonged. No longer. Long-term membership declines, hastened by the pandemic, have parents and scouts clamoring for change and questioning the future of the organization. Some families are peeling off to join other types of scouting groups. Clay Risen is a New York Times editor and reporter. He earned the status of Eagle Scout in the Boy Scouts growing up in Nashville. As an opinion editor for the Times last year, Clay Risen wrote about his own experiences and called for the Boy Scouts to end. Welcome to the show, Clay Risen.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jennifer Brown Urban is a professor in the Department of Family Science and Human Development at Montclair State University, where she also co-directs the Institute for Research on Youth Thriving and Evaluation. She recently researched issues of Boy Scout retention and leadership as part of a $5.7 million grant from the Stephen D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation. Welcome to the show, Jennifer Brown Urban.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Jennifer Brown Urban, the membership losses were significant, but they weren't new. It was part of a longer trend. Your research began before the pandemic, but continued through the months of it. What, all things being equal, are the leading reasons that Boy Scouts are dropping out?
So you're absolutely right that the pandemic had a real impact on the youth and their ability to participate in scouting activities. We were in the midst of collecting our data when the pandemic really took hold here in the United States. And what we heard from a lot of the youth was frustration, disappointment over their ability to engage in their advancement activities, for example. And we also had some interesting findings related to how their mental health was functioning during the pandemic as well.
As far as the membership numbers go for Boy Scouts, there's dropouts and then there's never joiners, right? I mean, can we distinguish that?
Yes. I think the biggest hit that the membership takes is typically in that transition period between Cub Scouts and what's now called Scouts BSA, used to be called Boy Scouts. So that program for the middle school, high school age group, they tend to lose membership during that phase. And part of that can be attributed to just the sort of regular developmental trajectory of kids. When kids are younger, their parents are more responsible for determining the kinds of activities that they're involved in. But as kids enter adolescence, they start to have a lot more say in the kinds of things that they do. So in some regards, there's a natural drop off there. And sports is one of the key alternative programs that really pulls a lot of kids away.
I would just imagine, you know, back in the olden days when I was a Girl Scout, there was literally nothing else to do. I mean, you could do after school choir and Girl Scouts, but particularly this is before Title IX. I mean, there was no sports for girls or anything like that. Now, I know you're focused on the boys aspect of it, but there's a lot of competition for time in general, right?
That's right. Yeah. The competition, though, in some ways is not a bad thing. We see the most positive developmental outcomes for kids when there's a good fit between their own individual needs and the opportunities available to them in their environments. So actually the fact that there's more opportunities available to them means that there's a greater chance that kids are going to find a good fit for them and therefore have more positive outcomes throughout their adolescence.
Clay Risen, last year you wrote an opinion column for the New York Times calling for the end of the Boy Scouts. You're an Eagle Scout, and I'm interested in how, you know, the bridge from your positive experiences with Boy Scouts to your conclusion that they should end.
I guess I would say I'd qualify that a little. It's not that I actively want to see the Boy Scouts end. It's more that I look at the current outlook for Boy Scouts as an organization, not scouting as a movement, but the organization, and it's a pretty grim picture. I wish them well, and I had great experiences in Boy Scouts, but I look at it and think that it's going to be very hard for them to recover after the onslaught of lawsuits and liabilities that they face. You know, my point was that being said, scouting as an idea, as a movement, the idea of engaging youth in service and outdoor activities and leadership is very valuable and in fact can survive. And I think in some ways the movement would benefit from getting out from under the cloud that unfortunately has settled upon the Boy Scouts of America.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Clay Risen. He's a New York Times editor and reporter, an Eagle Scout, and the parent of children in scouting. He wrote a piece that's titled Save Scouting and the Boy Scouts for the New York Times as a deputy daily opinion editor last year. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Also with us, Jennifer Brown Urban. She's the co-director of the Institute for Research on Youth Thriving and Evaluation at Montclair State University in New Jersey. And we are talking about scouting and the future of scouting kind of writ large going forward in the United States. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Your research, Jennifer, also looked at tangible ways that youths benefit from scouting in this day and age. What did you find?
So we find a lot of positive outcomes for kids, including things like leadership skills, which is, of course, one of the hallmarks of scouting, one of the things that we often associate with scouting. We also see that scouts have strong communication skills, which is, of course, another important and valuable thing that kids can get out of the program. A commitment to doing their duty as a citizen. Sense of purpose was a really big one. Having a stronger sense of purpose, and in particular, beyond the self orientation. In other words, an interest and commitment to doing things for others, and having that be a real driving force in their lives. And also goal orientation. So being able to set goals and take the necessary steps to achieving them. So these are all a set of sort of character outcomes. Positive outcomes that we like to see in all of our kids.
How do you measure that? I mean, how do you know that's the case? It's what they're telling you, or are there some way that you're concluding that with other less obvious ways?
So we have a number of different ways that we collected data as part of our study, which included interviews with adult leaders, as well as interviews with the youth themselves, and surveys with the adult leaders and the youth. And we also did some observations of adult training programs as well.
Okay.
So a number of different ways that we gathered information.
You know, Clay Risen, talk a little bit about your experience as a scout in Nashville growing up. You didn't have the negative experiences that we're learning about the sexual assault scandals that have really just raked the Boy Scouts over the coals.
Oh, no, certainly I didn't experience anything like that. My scout troop had a strong esprit de corps, if you will. We had great adult leaders. It was, you know, all boys, obviously, and really created sort of a third space for those of us who are in it, outside of family, outside of school, a place where we were able to develop our own relationships and our own skills. We spent a lot of time outdoors. We spent a lot of time learning, you know, the skills that go into being a Boy Scout. I would say the thing that I took away most from it was, you know, Boy Scouts is, among other things, is a great space, or scouting in general, is a great space for kids who, let's say, don't fit into or are looking for an outlet from the rigors and expectations of the school environment. So my school was very sport-centric, but I was not looking to play organized sports. What I liked to do was to go hiking and camping and climbing and doing the same kind of outdoor activities that were every bit as rigorous, but were not offered in a conventional youth education program, you know, aka school. So I had a wonderful time, and that was the thing that really motivated me to try to find something similar for my children.
And yet the Scouts, I mean, that's what I grew up with, too. My dad was a Scout leader. They went on great hikes, you know, all over the country, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, all of that was a big part of it. And he got into it as a youth after coming from inner city Detroit. And it was a way to get him out into nature. And he kind of glommed on that for my brothers. But the Boy Scouts, Clay, have expanded way beyond that. So have the Girl Scouts, and we'll talk about that later in the program. But, you know, everything from STEM to, you know, the arts, there's a lot more to scouting now, right?
Oh, of course. And even when I was in Scouts, there were all kinds of activities that you could do through merit badge projects. I did an architecture merit badge. There was, I think, at the time, it was just called computers. This was in the late 80s, early 90s. But now it's, you know, these things have evolved. But, you know, yes, these days there's a lot more engagement with, let's say, the, you know, the world of kids outside of what used to be the bread and butter of sports and school and, you know, a few other things. Extracurriculars are much more robust in scouting.
Has that worked? I mean, from your calculations, Jennifer Brown Urban, has that helped scouting stem some of the, or staunch some of the membership bleeding?
Absolutely. The more activities that they're able to provide, again, the more likely they are to appeal to a wider range of kids. And in particular, I think one of the big draws are the opportunities at summer camps and then high adventure programming as well, which kids wouldn't necessarily have access to.
I'm going to take a few calls real quick. Dave in New Albany, you're on the air. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. So I came from a family that had a strong history in scouting. My uncle was an Eagle Scout. I went all the way through, actually just stopped, but got into sports. But when the Scouts became sort of hostile to the gay community, was when I really became aware of it. And my wife and I actually have said to our kids, we don't want you to participate because of that perspective. So I'm kind of curious to hear the guest react to that statement, and I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Let's start with you, Jennifer Brown Urban. How did that pop up in your research?
Yeah, so we also focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion as part of our work. And the organization is definitely a predominantly white and Christian organization in terms of both their adult volunteers and the youth membership. There were a number of changes that happened during the course of time that we were involved in our study. One most notably was the addition of girls to the two hallmark programs, Cub Scouts and Scouts BSA. We did a lot of work though, looking at diversity and inclusion and what the general feelings are among the current youth participants and adult leaders. And we identified a number of changes that would really need to be made in order to successfully retain and recruit a more diverse population among adults and kids, not the least of which is establishing a really clear policy and identity for the organization that is clearly communicated to the broader public. Also, additional training would be really critical. And we did a what we call a data use meeting where we brought our data to the leadership of BSA and went through a process where we looked at that data. We looked at what we were finding and seeing and came up with action plans for how they could move forward as an organization to address those concerns around a lack of diverse participation.
And how did they respond?
They responded very positively. We were really thrilled actually at the level of engagement from the very, very top leadership of the organization. Unfortunately, because of everything that's been going on, they've also had a lot of layoffs of staff.
Right.
So it's unclear to me at this point how far they've gotten with some of those action plans that we put into place. But at least at the time, and this was back in October, they had some nice, robust plans in place for moving forward. And I think these would be particularly important coming out the other side of the bankruptcy in order to reestablish that identity and to make sure that they're really appealing to a more diverse audience.
What do you think, Clay Risen?
Yeah, I think that there's a real complicated story here, right? On the one hand, you have a leadership, a kind of corporate central leadership, that on the one hand is I think honestly interested in moving forward, being more progressive, trying to give the Boy Scouts a more orient them more toward diversity, equity, and inclusion. At the same time, that central organization is hamstrung by both the debt that and financial obligations brought on by these lawsuits, and also honestly just the collective guilt of having brushed a lot of these accusations and cases under the carpet for a long time. At the same time, you have this wide diversity in councils and troops, where some of them are extremely conservative. Some of them are very religiously conservative, tied to religious communities. Others right. are very progressive. Mine was a very progressive group, and it was tied to a relatively progressive church. And so you have a lot of tension between those. And there's only so much that the central organization can do because it has so much countervailing pressures from the kind of rank and file.
The locals, kind of.
Yeah, I can follow up on what Clay was saying. I agree. That was actually one of the interesting things that we noted. Our study was a national scale study, and I often commented it felt like we were seeing a snapshot of America. In terms of the kind of polarization that we are seeing, you see that also represented in the organization, which, as Clay was alluding to, can put the national office in something of a bind when they're trying to appeal to this really diverse group. And there is a lot of local level control and decision-making that happens, which in some ways is really great because things can be tailored to the local needs of the communities, but in other ways can really hamstring the organization more broadly. One thing that was really fascinating though is that despite those real differences in sort of worldviews, when we would talk to folks in completely different diverse parts of the country, they all talked about the Scouts BSA program in the exact same way. When we asked them, how does this program work? What do you do? What outcomes result because of that? It didn't matter if we were talking to people in Utah or Maine or Florida. They all described the program in the exact same way and had a very, very clear idea of the mission grounded in the Scout Oath and the Scout Law, which to me was really fascinating. I've worked with and studied a lot of youth organizations, and to see that level of sort of continuity was unusual and a potential strength of the organization that they could potentially build from.
We're going to take a quick break. Continue our conversation. That's Jennifer Brown Urban. She's co-director of the Institute for Research on Youth Thriving and Evaluation at Montclair State University in New Jersey. And she researched issues of Boy Scout retention and leadership as part of a grant from the Stephen D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation. Also with us, Clay Risen. He's New York Times editor and reporter. He is of what earned the status of Eagle Scout and the Boy Scouts growing up in Nashville. And as an opinion editor for the New York Times last year, he wrote about his own experiences, but also called for maybe an end to the Boy Scouts as we know it. Stay with us. We have more coming up. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Robert Baden-Powell looked around his native England in 1910 and saw young people physically unfit for war and leaving rural life behind for industrialized cities. He wanted to find a way to reconnect young people to the outdoors and stave off what he called physical deterioration and, quote, moral degeneracy. His guide, Scouting for Boys, spawned the worldwide scouting movement, one that has endured for more than a century now. But decades-old sexual abuse cases that now top 82,000, thousands of lawsuits, a subsequent bankruptcy, and a recent historic $850 million settlement have taken toll on the Boy Scouts of America. We're talking today about the survival of scouting and its future. Still with us, New York Times journalist Clay Risen, who earned the rank of Eagle Scout, now calls for Boy Scouts to end, at least as we know it. Jennifer Brown Urban is a professor at Montclair State University, where she co-directs the Institute for Research on Youth Thriving and Evaluation. She recently researched issues of Boy Scout retention and leadership as part of a grant from the Stephen D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation. Joining us is Jeff Moe. He is the Scout Executive CEO for the Simon Kenton Scout Council, Boy Scouts of America, which serves 19 counties in central and southern Ohio and northern Kentucky. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you.
Jeff, Simon Kenton Council, it's one of the largest in the country. When you hear the phrase, the future of scouting, what does that look like to you?
It's bright, but it's changing. I think that our organization is taking a little bit different tact in terms of involving the entire family. Our programs have gone co-ed in the last several years, and so fully co-ed now. It's been co-ed since the 70s, but more focus on the whole family, I think.
And why is that? What about that makes it bright? What do you mean by that?
It allows the entire family to get engaged and involved. Looking at, for example, some of our camps over the years have been just for scouts. And moving ahead, camps will be for entire families, or at least some of the camps.
We were talking earlier about one of the things about scouting was you get away from the family. You're kind of learning to develop your own relationships, develop your own sense of leadership, that kind of a thing. How do you balance those two, bringing the family in more and developing, personal development of scouts?
Well, I think that there's room for both, and that you're absolutely right that summer camp does allow a young person to grow and mature and learn things on their own, but engaging the family unit only helps reinforce some of that behavior.
Yeah, how has your organization been working to retain members?
That's a tough one. A good year for retention for us is 75% of our young people. Mm-hmm. And so when 25% or more are going out the back door every year, it's a struggle. We're trying to make programs that and adapt the programs to be more relevant to young people, to incorporate things that parents see are of value going forward. STEM activities is one big one that it comes to mind right away. Make it a little bit more easy and more engaging to the young people.
In light of the sex abuse scandals that span decades, how has the council worked to reassure families that scouting is safe? Is that bringing families into the fold part of that?
The message is that scouting right now is one of the safest places that is available for young people. Most of the claims that are part of the current bankruptcy litigation came from the 80s and the 70s and before. And our practices and our policies have been in place for a number of years that make scouting extremely safe and have created many barriers to prevent such things from continuing to happen.
That's Jeff Moe. He is Scout Executive CEO for the Simon Kenton Council, Boy Scouts of America. It serves 19 counties in central and southern Ohio and northern Kentucky and is headquartered in Columbus. Let's hear from Christine right now. Christine in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling because I have a 15-year-old son who's participated in Boy Scouts since he was probably in kindergarten, I think. And I have to say it has been an amazing experience for him, developing responsibility and leadership skills. There's not another organization I can think of where he would have had the opportunity to do all that, as well as the outdoors activities, I just can't speak highly enough about the great opportunities he's had through Boy Scouts.
You know, during that time since he's been in the organization for so long, you have a little bit of a bird's eye view and a personal view. Have you been concerned about the history of the Scouts and the sex abuse cases and other aspects of scouting, like you know, the question now is more integrated than ever, but have you been concerned?
You know, I have to say, I feel like Boy Scouts has done a very good job addressing those concerns. I think as parents, we do have to be very careful and pay attention to the activities our kids are involved in. But at least the Boy Scouts my son has been involved in, parent leaders have to go through quite a bit of training. Mm-hmm. We have always two deep levels of adult interaction with kids. So you would never have a Boy Scout alone one-on-one with an adult. Even like emails, like my son, for instance, has to email adults to maybe coordinate a merit badge like meeting. But I always have to be copied on that. And the leaders have to, if they were going to email my son, have to copy another adult. So those are just little things, but mm-hmm. I feel like as a whole, they've really addressed those issues that have made me feel comfortable as a parent, having my son involved in that organization.
All right. Well, Christine, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
And thanks. I can speak just sure. a little bit to what Christy was saying. We, from our study, we saw that 98% of the adult leaders had completed the youth protection training, and that's a required training that they do. And they really were taking it very seriously. We also heard that a lot in our interviews. And as Christy alluded to, the 2D policy regarding any email communications or interactions with youth actually applied to our research team as well. So our whole research team was required to complete that training. And we always had to have a second person listening on any of the interviews that we did with kids. So it definitely was a aspect that was very much emphasized to us from the organization.
You know, you heard Clay Risen, you heard Christine mention that there's really no other option besides the Boy Scouts to engage in all these different kinds of activities. You disagree with that, right?
Well, I think to get to what you're alluding to, my children are in what until recently was called the Baden-Powell Service Association. It's now called Outdoor Service Guides, and it's a it's a growing group. It's essentially a group that pursues scouting in a slightly different way, and the availability of it is of course dependent on what other people in the community are doing. It's very mm-hmm. strong here in New York. It's strong on the West Coast. It's getting started in places like Virginia and Mississippi and parts of Texas. I don't think it's particularly strong in Ohio right mm-hmm. now. And so I'm sure she's correct that there's no real alternative. But fortunately, we in New York had the opportunity to look at a couple of different outing opportunities, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and the OSG, which is co-ed, and ended up going with that.
Let's see, Kenneth in Northwest Ohio, you're on the air. Hi, Kenneth.
Hi, good morning to everybody. I think I heard said early in the program that Mr. Risen's Eagle Scout. I haven't heard it mentioned a second time. If so, good for him. I was talking to a buddy of mine who's got an older son who's now out of Scouts, and he was involved, and I know other people. I know some of the Scout leaders in our region, not currently, but, from years ago. And mm-hmm. and what my friend and I were talking about the other day, we belong to another organization, which is not related. And he said that they are similar in that the Scouts are pushing all manner of responsibility down, down, down. Paperwork, with the internet and out, forms no longer come. You go online and print the form out and fill it in and send it in. And ultimately, I think he was just saying that the lower echelons work very hard to make upper echelon shine. And it's just not reciprocal.
Jeff Moe, what do you think?
I guess my impression is that we're trying to make as much information accessible to the frontline leaders and make it as convenient, put as much as we can online so that we can expedite and make it more simple to be a volunteer leader.
What about that structure of these local, for lack of, you know, troops and chapters or for that kind of that corporate structure? I think of them as almost like franchises out there of a national organization.
Our national organization has recently streamlined, reducing the number and, you know, the bureaucracy in between a local council and the national organization. And, you know, a Cub Scout leader or a Scouts BSA leader does not generally interact much with the national organization. They interact with the local council.
And what are your thoughts about that and how the organization exists today?
I think it's some of the reorganization is out of necessity, and I think removing some of the bureaucracy makes that easier for us to support the frontline leaders and to allow them to do what it is they do that's so important for our young people.
How did, you know, Clay Risen, that the structure of it, you were talking about this other organization that your kids are involved in, and I'm wondering if it's got that corporate structure to it, or does that matter to you as a parent?
It doesn't matter that much to me. And no, the OSG doesn't have a corporate structure at all. Really, it's there's a central organization that's all volunteer, and, you know, essentially exists to set standards to make sure that there's a central identity to the organization. But a lot of decision making and a lot of the kind of day to day, even year to year identity questions are set by individual troops, and that's, I think that's really important, because especially if you get a place like what we have in Brooklyn, where there are several troops within the umbrella organization, the umbrella local, you have people able to pick and choose based on mundane questions like scheduling, but also bigger questions like what's the leadership involved, what is the specific identity of that group, is it someplace that my kids would fit in? And that, you know, that's something that I benefited a lot from when I was in Boy Scouts. I was in Nashville, had the choice of lots of different troops with lots of different identities. And I was able to go with the one where I felt most comfortable.
Yeah, Jeff Moe.
An example, I think, of the support, the corporate support, as you call it, from our parent organization, they provide a lot of research and development for us. For example, the BSA is introducing a new merit badge that's focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's called Citizenship in Society, and it will soon be one of the merit badges required for the rank of Eagle. They've developed that. They've asked the Simon Kenton Council here in Columbus and a couple of other councils to pilot that and test it and give feedback so that they can tweak it and then officially roll it out in November. Local councils wouldn't be able to do things like that.
I just want to take one real quick call before we have to say goodbye to Jeff Moe and Clay Risen. Henry in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Henry.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I was in the scouting when I was in like middle school and my first half of high school. This is like 1980s. Mm-hmm. And I'm from New York City originally, from Harlem. And I guess my question or comment is, what is scouting doing to address recruiting of, like, you know, African-American and Latino youth to the program? Because I remember even back then, scouting had a problem where there was just simply not a lot of black and brown, like, Boy Scouts, you know, around, basically, to a point where when I would tell people I was into scouting, they would be looking at me like, you do what? Like, you know, I was almost making it up. So it's like, I think if there was a way to reach out to these communities, you know, that kind of would probably, you know, help with the recruiting and retention problem they're having. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Henry. I appreciate it. Jeff Moe, what about that?
So one of the approaches that we've taken locally that's modeled on successful programs across the country is the core city of Columbus. We have partnered with local community organizations and especially with Columbus City Schools, where we do after-school programming, and when parents are unable to get involved, we'll hire someone to serve as the volunteer scout leader, and it's a paid staff member. We raise dollars specifically to support the program, and we've been able to involve almost 1,000 young people annually in kind of a modified program delivery of our program of scouting.
Well, Jeff Moe, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your insights.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Jeff Moe is a Scout Executive CEO for the Simon Kenton Council, Boy Scouts of America, serving 19 counties in central and southern Ohio and northern Kentucky, and it's headquartered here in Columbus. And Clay Risen, thank you so much for your time today as well. I appreciate your insights.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Clay Risen is a New York Times editor and reporter, an Eagle Scout, and the parent of children in scouting, and he wrote a column last year as an opinion editor at the New York Times, critical of scouting, Boy Scouts. And we're going to post that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Girl Scout membership nationwide is down 30%, largely due to COVID, and the fundraiser it's most well known for, the annual cookie sale, sold 15 million fewer boxes in 2020. On top of that, there's the 2017 decision by the Boy Scouts of America to admit girls, and it's created confusion and caused Girl Scouts to sue the Boy Scouts. The case is ongoing. We're talking about now about Girl Scouts, its mission, and the future of scouting. Still with us is Jennifer Brown Urban. She's a professor at Montclair State University, where she co-directs the Institute for Research on Youth Thriving and Evaluation, and she recently researched issues of Boy Scout retention and leadership as part of a grant from the Stephen D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation. Joining us is Tammy Wharton. She's president and CEO of Girl Scouts of Ohio's Heartland Council, which covers 30 counties in central and eastern Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So that's a big drag about the cookie sales last year. Really, I mean, a lot of cookie sales take place in the fronts of grocery stores, which they weren't having none of that during COVID, right?
Correct. There are only a few partners that would allow us in the front of the stores, so the girls couldn't learn the communication skills that they so need. They're on phones all the time, so to be able to have that up close and personal communication is such a critical skill to learn to success for a future.
And it's a way to be out there in front of the community and show them what you're doing.
Correct. And everybody loves a Girl Scout, you know, a good Girl Scout cookie. And I always say there's more to it than the cookies. The box of cookies means they're learning financial literacy skills, goal setting, business ethics. There's just so many things that girls learn from the program that help them with their future.
What I've noticed is how Girl Scouts has used the billboard of cookies, for lack of a better word, or the boxes themselves to express the mission of the Scouts and what girls are really out there doing.
Well, we want to make sure that the community understands that while you're getting a tasty treat, you're also supporting the development of a girl so that she can have a successful future, whether that be in business or whatever she chooses to do in the future.
You know, how much of what, you know, Jennifer Brown Urban, what you study, is there much of a contrast? Are you interested in the contrast between how the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts have evolved over time or developed over time, maybe is a better way to say it, in the United States?
We haven't really studied the Girl Scouts at all, but from what we have looked at, the programs are fairly different. So that if you were a girl who was interested in Girl Scouts and participating, and then also simultaneously participating in Scouts BSA or Cub Scouts, you'd likely be doing fairly different activities. And so there really is a place, I think, for both organizations, and they may appeal to different girls.
As you look at the future of scouting in general, I mean, what do you think about the future going forward?
Well, I'm excited about the future. And if I could just go back to what Jennifer said, we have a Girl Scout Research Institute, and studies show and research shows that girls learn best in an all-girl environment. So that's how our programs are developed, in that safe space where they can fail and fail quickly and get back up. And they don't get that all the time in the classroom or when they're in co-ed environments. So I think that that's going to be extremely helpful to girls in the future, which is a bright spot for our programming. And we have different pillars. We have STEM. We're very big into STEM, and there's so many jobs related to STEM in the future that would help close the pay gap. So if we get girls interested and involved early on, then our hope is that they stay in that pipeline throughout. We do have the outdoors. People say girls don't do camping. That's so untrue. We have camps going on right now, and actually they're filled to capacity because girls are ready to get back into the outdoors. We have that entrepreneurial pillar, which that little known cookie program, financial literacy, falls under, which is the largest social entrepreneurial program in the world run by girls. And if you think about it, it's an $800 million business typically, run by girls. And we have some incredible support of adults that help as well. But I mean, if you just think about that, the skills that girls are learning, no wonder a lot of Girl Scouts or our future entrepreneurs and business owners were Girl Scouts.
The national president of the Girl Scouts posted a message after the George Floyd murder by police officer Derek Chauvin. And I'm wondering how unusual it was for the Girl Scouts to wade into a social justice movement in that way.
Well, we've been involved in diversity, equity, and inclusion since our founding. And Martin Luther King said that Girl Scouts is a force to be reckoned with because of our desegregation efforts and always leading the way on the front leading edge of that inclusion piece. So while we're wading into social justice, I think it's a national progression. And girls today, they want to make a difference. And so they are starting to use their advocacy knowledge that they're learning through our programs to advocate for issues that are important to them, which may be similar to what happened with the announcement of Judith Batty and talking about the social justice piece. It may be for the environment. It may be for homelessness. There's just so many different issues out there that I think it's important that we start talking about and let girls advocate for the things that are important to them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Jennifer Brown Urban. I think of the Scouts as being sort of insular. It's the skills and the qualities that you get from scouting happen within your troop or whatever. It isn't an outward reaching organization into social issues.
Well, I'm not sure that that's entirely accurate.
Okay.
There's a lot of work that they do within their communities. And if you even think just about their Eagle Scout projects, the entire point of those is to do something for their community in some way. And I think that the sort of involvement within their local communities in particular is a key element of the program.
Okay. And that's what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And I would just say that the Gold Award, so our Gold Award Girl Scouts, that's the highest award a girl can earn, and only 6% earn it. But they're doing things to change the world, and they're sustainable projects that are at minimal 80-hour projects. But again, it's very important that they look at the issues that are happening in their community and do something about them and something that they're passionate about, which is making them want to make a change. So it's really important that we talk about those, make the world a better place. I mean, that's part of our mission, and our girls are doing that.
A lack of diversity has been an issue in scouting. We talked about it a little bit earlier from the Boy Scout point of view, and the membership still is predominantly white and Christian, and Girl Scouts too. How are the Girl Scouts working locally and or within your region to change that?
So we're creating a lot of different partnerships with different entities to reach out and spread the word that Girl Scouts is not about the Caucasian girls from the suburbs coming to participate in our programming. We're excited about a new initiative that you'll hear more about over the next year called Dream Big. We're creating a STEM immersive campus, and our goal is to reach out to diverse girls from all over our region, our 30-county region, to come and learn about STEM and learn about some in-demand jobs and really change the dynamic and do something different than is happening across the country even.
And Jennifer Brown-Nerman, again, I know that your expertise is with studying the Boy Scouts, but I'm interested in I want Tammy Wharton to talk about this too, is the issue of mental health in the Scouts, kind of getting personal, when it comes to membership in an organization like that.
Yeah. So there's two, I think, important points that I'd like to make there. One is that, as I mentioned, we were collecting data in March of 2020 as the pandemic was taking hold. And what we saw in our youth participants was that the kids who had the strongest beyond the self orientation, in other words, those who were particularly focused on others, actually had higher levels of depressive and anxiety symptoms, which might seem a little bit surprising or counterintuitive. But when we look in our qualitative data and in our interviews with the kids, what we were seeing is that these were kids who were really concerned with others, really wanted to help others. But this was just as the country was shutting down. This was a time when really nobody could do much of anything. We were all staying in our homes, and that it could be because of that sort of desire to do for others, but an inability to do much of anything that was associated with those stronger depressive and anxiety symptoms. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is one of the things that we see BSA doing pretty well is the inclusion of kids with different behavioral, social, and emotional challenges and physical challenges as well. Mm-hmm. I think the real strength of the organization that they're very welcome to these neurodiverse youth or youth with physical challenges, and they are committed to making accommodations so that those kids can participate.
Tammy Wharton, what about that inclusion and that mental health piece in all of this?
Well, I think mental health is a big issue that we're facing today. It was a big issue before the pandemic, and it's even more so now. And I think that our programs are addressing that, whether it be specific on mental health issues or the way we go about in creating our programs with the care of caring adults that are there to mentor girls. So I think that it's important that all of our programs think about what are the things we need to incorporate. And, you know, the anti-bullying, the relational aggression, we need to teach girls that about what's right and wrong, those value systems, and talk about it. I think so too many times we don't even talk about what's happening, and we expect girls to be able to react positively. And the environment that we have for those girls in the programs, in the troops, et cetera, create that area where they can have these conversations that they may not otherwise be having if they're behind a cell phone texting, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, we're running out of time, and it's not really fair, Tammy Wharton, to ask you this, but I have to ask about the decision by the Boy Scouts to admit girls and the ripple effect it's had on Girl Scouts. Can you respond to that? I know there's a lawsuit pending, but just has there been a local impact?
So what I would say is we believe that we are the best organization for girls because we create our programs specifically for girls. I can't really speak to the programming of what the Boy Scouts are doing, but research does show that the programs that we are providing are successful. We have a 109-year history of this success. So we encourage anybody who wants to get girls into all different kinds of activities, from the outdoors to life skills to financial literacy to STEM, to look at us, because we are creating new programs and We're excited about the future, and we're excited about helping girls succeed.
Tammy Wharton, president and CEO of Girl Scouts of Ohio's Heartland Council. It covers 30 counties in central and eastern Ohio. It's headquartered in Columbus. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jennifer Brown Urban, co-director of the Institute for Research on Youth Thriving and Evaluation at Montclair State University in New Jersey. Thanks for being with me this hour. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Thanks, everybody else, for listening. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Aaron Esmont, producer Matt Rand, assistant producer Bobby Gerberich, video production by the Ohio Channel, board operations by Herb Howenstein and Scott Good. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.